Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, what's going on? How are we doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to join us. So, Gentry, before we get to the Preds and their rough loss last night in Game 1 to Colorado, I want to get your thoughts on all this. We've just had some heated discussions for the past hour on the Ryan Tannehill press conference yesterday and him saying it's not his job to mentor Malik Willis. What was your reaction to that, and what do you make of those comments from Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't there yesterday. I went back and watched it after it happened, and you know, I realized pretty quick that was going to be the part that got the most attention. You know, it was kind of comment that when I heard it, you kind of wince a little bit because, you know, yeah, it's probably not going to sit well. But I think probably too much is being made out of it based off what Tannehill really meant. But still, it's clumsy, and he shouldn't have said it the way he did. It opens him up. The wording and the way he said that opened himself up to a lot of what happened yesterday with on Twitter and how that kind of took off on him, even though I don't see Ryan Tannehill as a bad teammate because he never really has been. So I don't think there's any substance to it from his perspective. It was just a stupid thing to say.
Rex Road's really struggling with the mute.
I needed a mute mentor, and this is all coming to the forefront today. So Ryan Tannehill's comment kind of exposed, I think we all need mentors in society. Okay, I'm wasting time. Yeah, it's interesting, Gentry, because I said earlier in the show, like, honestly, I was watching because I wasn't there either. I was watching as it happened, and it completely missed me that would even be talked about afterward. It was because I think in the entirety of his answer, I thought was fine, but here we are. So as someone on our text line just said, hey, the Preds really appreciate this, guys. You know, you guys can talk about Tannehill's comment instead of how awful they were last night. So Gentry, how awful were the Preds last night, and where do you think this is going?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty awful. Certainly being in the arena, it was, once it got away, it was gone, and they just decided not to play for about the first 15 minutes of the game, and that's not going to work against a team this good. Avalanche clearly came out and meant business, and the Preds didn't. And you know, I mean, you could blame a lot of different things, but the truth is they really weren't very good at much of anything for a large part of that game.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And you know, obviously you look at the first period, Gentry, and it's 5-0, and everybody points the finger at the goaltender, which I understand. David Rittich was not very good last night, but I thought the Predators were just horrible in pretty much every aspect of the game in front of him as well. With that being said, Connor Ingram does come in, I thought played relatively well. Do you think it's Connor Ingram's net in Game 2 coming up?
I think it'd have to be. I mean, Hines didn't say that after the game last night. He held off from confirming that, but he was complimentary of Connor Ingram. So I think so. I mean, he clearly outplayed David Rittich, but you know, the bar wasn't very high. But at this point, you're looking for any reason to carry hope into the next game. I mean, this loss it is just one game. And, you know, you point out Colorado won Game 1 against Vegas last year 7-1 and then went on to lose the series. So I don't think the Preds are out of it by any stretch. It's just the way this happened matched up with what everyone was saying was going to happen in this series. It was the Preds' worst fears of being just completely overmatched by this team realized in 15 minutes, and partly because you didn't have UC Soros. It was everything kind of lined up on them, and anybody who came into the series going, you know, I think the Preds got a good shot, watched that first 15 minutes, didn't think that anymore.
I mean, they've been getting just waxed quite a bit lately, Gentry, and some of that has been without Soros. Some of it, though, with him, including the most severe case in that second period against St. Louis. What do you think is going on? And how do you think, you know, this is, I guess, like, what's your sense for, you know, how they're handling this, what their mindset is at this point?
Yeah, I think the numbers are, I think they've given up something like 32 goals in their last six games. I think that's right. And I added up 35 for the whole month of January in like 13 games. It's clearly been sliding, and you're right. It was happening even when Saras was in there, but now without him, it just seemed like last night, you know, Colorado really came out fast and aggressive. They got on the power play early. They get that first goal, then you blink and they have a second one. And it just seemed at that point like the Predators just froze a little bit. And they're just standing around kind of waiting on someone to make a big save that didn't happen. They just weren't nearly as aggressive, and they were on their heels. And I think this season they've built so much of what they've accomplished off being the aggressor and having this identity that John Hines has talked about all season, and it was just missing. I mean, Colorado came out and started throwing punches, and it kind of looked like the Predators were just standing there.
Gentry, if you're a Preds fan watching this series, obviously, I mean, they're heavy underdogs. They were heavy underdogs before last night's game took place. And now, I mean, most people are going to write them off at this point in this series, which I understand. But to add on to that, I mean, Philip Forsberg is still playing without a contract for next year. How concerned are you at this point that Forsberg has not been signed, and what that could mean as free agency is drawing closer?
I mean, it's a concern. I don't know if it's a pressing one right this minute, but yeah, sure. I think, you know, you don't trade that guy basically because you want to make a playoff run. And since you don't trade that guy, you're in a position where you almost have to re-sign him. And then, so I think it's going to have to happen. It's probably going to have to happen at the terms that are a lot more agreeable to the player than the team. But at this point, you know, I think the, you know, Forsberg didn't play any better than anyone else last night. So we'll, I guess, see what happens.
Gentry, I did want to go back big picture on the Titans here after the weekend. Very eventful weekend, obviously, starting with the A.J. Brown trade. We know who they've drafted now. We know their quarterback is a non-mentor, apparently. But as you take everything into account, how do you feel about, I guess, where they are now compared to where they started, you know, as of Thursday afternoon? And also, beyond that, who would you declare as your favorite right at this moment for the AFC South?
Ooh, that's a good question. I've kind of thought all along that the Titans were still the favorite, only because we seem to play this game every year with the Colts, where they make a few moves and people start getting enamored with them again, and all of a sudden, you know, slowly over the course of the season, or the preseason, now the Colts are the favorite. It's happening again, but I think the Titans are encouraging it quite a bit more this year than the year before. I think that, you know, obviously trading A.J. Brown is not going to make you any better. I mean, I'm sure you guys have talked about that endlessly, and I don't think it was what the Titans would have preferred to do, but it's what happened. And so, yeah, now you're having to replace one of your best players, so that doesn't help. But there just seems to be this vibe around the Titans right now that's just not good. And I think it stems from the loss to Cincinnati, the way it happened. And that loss really took a lot out of this franchise, and they're still talking about it. And it makes you wonder, you know, this offseason has just kind of been – some inadverse things, you know, just it was weird that your quarterback isn't at workouts and he's posting pictures from a boat. And I know he talked about that yesterday, but it's just been a lot of things that speak to a team that's just kind of having a hard time right now getting over how last season ended. I mean, I don't know if that's really the deal, but that's how it feels when you hear them talk and just how they've approached this offseason.
Entry Estes from the Tennessean, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Gentry, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and have fun out in Colorado.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Absolutely. Gentry Estes, our guest from the Tennessean, here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Join 1025 The Game and the Preds Energy Team tomorrow night as the Preds take on the Colorado Avalanche in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup playoffs at Headquarters Beercade for the Preds Bud Light Watch Party. You can come enjoy great drink specials, including $6 select cans, and a $10 Preds cocktail in order to win tickets to Round 1, Game 3, coming up on Saturday at Bridgestone Arena. It's the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beercade, located at 114 2nd Avenue South downtown. The puck drops at 8:30 tomorrow night. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game is Nashville's official home of NASCAR. Tune in this Sunday at 1:30 for the Goodyear 400 at Darlington Raceway. Also get set for the race with Chasing Checkers with Chase McCabe every Sunday at 8 o'clock on 102.5 The Game. NASCAR on 102.5 The Game, presented by Nashville Super Speedway and Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Game one last night between the Predators and the Colorado Avalanche. And Joe, it was a disaster pretty much from the start last night. Colorado gets a power play 2 minutes and 8 seconds into the game after a Michael McCarron high sticking penalty. Nathan MacKinnon scores the first goal. And basically the Avalanche were off and running from there. They score five in the first period. David Riddick gets chased from the game and the Predators lose 7-2 last night. There's a lot to sort through and react to last night in game one. But Joe, kind of the simplest way that I can describe it, it basically looked like the Predators didn't show up first 15 minutes of that game. I get that Colorado is really good and they are the better team in this series. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But the Predators basically no-showed the first 15 minutes of that period. And if you do that against Colorado, you're going to get embarrassed. And that's exactly what happened to the Predators last night.
Yeah, and you know, Gentry brought up the Colorado just destroying Vegas in a game last year and then ultimately losing the series. These things happen. You said earlier in the show, and I agree. I mean, I'll be very surprised tonight if Tampa Bay doesn't respond. And beat Toronto in game two. Certainly look like a team that can skate with Toronto, right? I mean, these things happen sometimes in playoff series, and you reset and you go to the next game. But I just wonder if this is just going to be the series. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be Avs 28, Preds 8. I just did quick math in my head at the end of the series, okay? But this could be indicative of the matchup. And it's up to the Preds to make that not reality. I mean, because I picked the Avs to win it all, and they're really good, and they looked really good. And remember, they were basically able to just skate out the last, 40 minutes of this game. But the Preds also helped with some ridiculous mistakes and just an overall lack of, I don't know if the word is urgency, focus. They didn't look like a team that realized they were playing in the playoffs, right?
They looked like they got shell-shocked. They looked like they were absolutely shell-shocked last night when Colorado came out of the gate. And look, it was not good from David Riddick. And there, I think if I had to assign some blame, I don't know that David Riddick is at the top of my list last night, because as I said, it looked like the Predators were skating in quicksand for the first 15 minutes of that game. So, there were some turnovers. They were on the power play, and Ekholm and Tomasino got crossed up with the puck, and all of a sudden Cogliano's got the puck going back the other way. I mean, there was some ugliness in that game from the Predators. David Riddick didn't help. I mean, the 6.15 save percentage, like I said last night on Twitter, yes, there were some grade-A opportunities given up by the Predators. You can make some saves every now and then too. Like I had a problem with the Devontae's goal to put him up 2-0. I mean, MacKinnon was a rope on that first one. I don't think UC Saros is stopping that puck. The Devontae is on the rush. It's a good shot. He's a good player. But that's a save you need to have in the playoffs if you're David Riddick there. And then it's 2-0. You're off and running from there. And I thought after it was 2-0, the Predators were just totally discombobulated for the rest of that first period. And then Ingram comes in, and, it's a 2-2 game after that with Ingram coming in. But it's 5-0 at that point. It's just a different set of circumstances that you're dealing with if you're the Avalanche there. So, the Predators got punched right in the mouth last night, and now you have to see how they respond in game two.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like with Riddick that every good opportunity the Avs got was going to go in, you know? I mean, with Saros in there, you know, it's not as bad. And look, you could make the argument too. You could make the case that he should have gone Ingram earlier, I suppose. I thought maybe at 4 he might, you know, he waited till 5. But even Saros, over, like, they're not winning the game to me with UC Saros. Okay. They're just not, it's just not quite as embarrassing with UC Saros. So you got to start there. I think it's pretty clear that Connor Ingram should get the start. I'll be very surprised if he doesn't get the start in game 2. And there is you're trying to win the series, you're trying to win game 2, you're trying to make the series, you're trying to make a run in the playoffs, but there is a really good chance Connor Ingram is UC Saros' backup next year. And so there's some down the road benefit to that. But for the short term, you just have to be so much better as a hockey team. Get out of this, whatever it is, take some quick penalty. And then for whatever reason, the penalty kill seems to not be ready to go early in a game. And you get that deficit. And then a team like the Avalanche will obviously just make you pay dearly if you keep doing that. And it's just one of several, you know, kind of troubling trends for the Preds here in the last month or so. They don't look like a playoff team right now, the way they're playing for most of the past month.
Well, I think chief among those concerning trends, and remember, I could just count them up real quick. 5 of these games that I'm about to roll off here are with UC Saros either in net or available to be in net for the Predators on the team. The St. Louis game, you give up 8 goals. You win the next night out against Calgary 3-2. And other than that Calgary game where you only gave up 2 goals, you gave up 6 to Tampa, 5 to Minnesota, 5 to Calgary, 4 to Colorado, 5 to Arizona, and then 7 last night to Colorado. It's not just a goaltending thing, although I don't think that's helped you as of late. The defense has gone totally MIA, and that's on the defensemen, but that's on the forwards as well. I mean, some of the decisions that they're making right now are just brutal, and it's pinching when you don't need to be pinching. It's not picking up your guy coming in the D zone on the rush. Like, it's a disaster at times right now defensively for this Predators team. And I mean, you really need to look there's a lot of things in hockey that you look a little deeper than the box score. I don't look a whole lot deeper in the box score when it comes to this. 8-6-5-5-4-5-7. That is not a winning formula in the NHL.
And it's so, you know, when they were playing at their best, there were a lot of things going well, but I guess I never would have expected that to become some big issue, you know? I mean, I still wondered, like, are they gonna maintain this pace with Forsberg and Deschamps? Are they going to be able to generate offense all season long? How much is the workload going to affect Saros? Things like this. I mean, because think about last year. As they turned from a bad team into a playoff team, some of that was young guys coming to the lineup, and certainly some of it was just that transition to being a heavy physical team that teams don't want to play. But like defensive, D zone attention to detail and things like that, those were all really good with a lot of the same guys, and even earlier this year. So my question is, you know, why has that eroded to this extent here? Is it just they're a tired team and it's manifesting itself in that? I do think that some of it is also, it is failing to generate offense. You get 0 shots on goal from the Johansson line last night. Yep. So when you're not doing, you know, when you're not playing offense, you're playing more defense, you're more prone to making mistakes, all that stuff. But still, it's just weird to me that, especially it seems like in the last month or so, that they've had all these issues and they don't look like the same team.
We'll take your thoughts on the Predators and their game 1 loss to the Avalanche last night, 7-2, the final score in game 1 last night out in Denver. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
Well, I think, you know, one is I think the important part, I think, is the start, how we're starting, is not allowing them to get on the power play early and get momentum and be able to get into our game and get guys, you know, establish our game a lot stronger and not get put on your heels. I mean, we're, you know, we're a young group. We had a lot of guys that had their first NHL playoff game. So that's all part of it, you know, and I think that that's what series are. That's what the playoffs are. We weren't good enough tonight to be able to win the game. And there's multiple reasons for that. I think a lot of them are fixable and correctable, and we have a good team. We have guys that can play. We play to an identity that gives us a chance to win. We got to get to that game, and we got to be a little bit smarter in certain areas, and you know, we'll be better. We will be better in game two than we were in game one.
That was Predators head coach John Hines last night after a 7-2 loss for the Predators in game one against the Colorado Avalanche. Now, to be honest, my immediate thought after hearing that from Hines last night was, God, I hope so. Hope you're better in game two than you were in game one, because the first 15 minutes were really bad. You know, we've talked about the penalty part of this. I mean, it's yet another game where you're 2 minutes and 8 seconds in, you give up, or you take a penalty and you put Colorado on the power play. And then Nathan McKinnon's off and running from there. I was disappointed last night in the Predators' power play. And I know they got a power play goal last night, and Matt Duchene scored a couple last night, one at 5-on-5 and one on the power play. I thought the first two power plays of the game were atrocious from the Predators. And, you know, that's not something we've said very much this year. They've been very good on the power play. The first power play, obviously, you've got the Ekholm Tomasino mishap where it ends up in the back of your net. The second power play, I'm not sure if they got 5 seconds of zone time on that second power play. They could not enter the zone. They could not establish possession. And that's one thing we talked about heading into this series, Joe. Like, you can't have now as the time where your power play isn't good. Like, you, in order for you to win this series, the odds were stacked against you anyway coming into the series. You can't just all of a sudden have your power play fall apart and think you're going to have any chance whatsoever in this series.
Well, it just goes along with the whole idea of, like, were you ready to play? You know, how do you come out and perform this poorly? That's one thing. Still amazing to say sometimes. Still amazing to say out loud sometimes. Like, we've come to expect excellence from the Preds' power play, you know? And then you get that. And so it's just like everything broke down. The things that weren't working well continue to not work well, except to an extreme. The goaltender was just bad, you know, and then even things that have been pretty consistently good. I guess Duchene scored two goals. So, you know, like you tweeted last night, it's like, well, at least that's a little bit annoying for the Avs fans who just wanted to boo him all night. Like, they had to watch him score two. Great pass by Granlund, you know, on the second one there. Yeah. But I mean, you got to be better in all aspects. And I just, one game, yes, playoff series can completely pivot from the result of the first game or of a game three blowout either way or whatever. But this is also like they carried over some really bad stuff that's been going on. And I think that's real concerning.
Well, they got to get that fixed. And, you know, to your point, I thought Colorado was locked in and they were ready to go from the jump last night. They know what the noise is around them. They've talked about it. Like, you know, they struggled coming down the stretch of the regular season. Most of the time when it's teams like Colorado and Tampa that struggle down the end of the regular season, I don't put a whole lot of stock into it because they're looking ahead to the playoffs. And you can say all the right things and do all the right things, but you're looking ahead to the playoffs when you know that that's ultimately what you're going to be judged by. I thought they came out last night and were locked in from the jump. They were very impressive to me in terms of how they took care of the puck. They weren't overzealous. They weren't trying to make plays out of nothing. When they didn't have it, they dumped it. And when they did, they took it to the hole and created some chances that way. So I was really impressed from Colorado there. And I don't know if it was their A-plus game last night, but I think it was pretty darn close to it from what we saw from Colorado. That's what's so mystifying to me is, like, I thought the Predators were so bad in the first 15 minutes of the period. Colorado doesn't need any help, and you just gift wrap to them a few goals in the first period. I'm very interested to see how that changes in game two, because I think the most disappointing part of it for me last night just watching is it looked like the Predators were not ready to go in a playoff series where nobody is giving you a chance to win. You're the underdog. you don't really have anything to lose heading into this series. And I thought the Predators would come out with an effort level and with a compete level that would give Colorado some problems. And they just didn't have that last night. And to me, that was more disappointing than anything else.
Yeah. And I'm not saying they were scared or intimidated. I'm sure they weren't, but they looked that way at times. Like they were completely on their heels and just overwhelmed by what Colorado was doing. You know, I mean, Ekholm, to your point, you know, so Ekholm had a quote the day before about, you know, we're a lot better than you guys think we are, you know, but yeah, we're going to use that. We're going to use the underdog thing. And of course, I love that, you know, like stuff like that. It's like, well, it's not like this is a college football in the old days where like we're voting in a poll, right? Like you are the last team in the Western Conference. Like the standings dictate who you are, what you are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now I understand the idea of using everybody's picking against you and you believe you can beat them. You beat that team, three out of four times, right? You beat that team three out of four times. So I understand that. But I mean, you know, you're also in this series because of how poorly you played in the last month. I mean, going into April, what were we talking about? Is there still a chance they could get second place? Can they make a run at the Wild and the Blues, all that stuff? And then it turns down to holding on for dear life to get into the playoffs. So, I mean, it's the Preds' play has been the problem. And I agree with you that given something that should be some kind of an intangible edge for you, instead it looked like you listened to what everyone said about you and said, oh, yeah, actually you're right. Yep, 5-0.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in William from Nashville who wants to weigh in. William, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, I just wanted to say I think the Preds are heading in the right direction. They identified what they need to do. The problem is they still have a system of players left over from the last system. So you got this goulash. The chef wanted a steak, but all you got is a goulash. We have these undersized defensemen with these big forwards we supposedly kind of got. I just believe they shouldn't have made the playoffs yet so they can focus on continuing the retool. They're just a mishmash. Like the most unappreciated thing is a real solid defenseman that just plays defense and is in. Like Konstantinov in Detroit in the 90s, he didn't score that many points, but he was one of the greatest defensemen of all time. I don't think people really appreciate that. A real solid defenseman in their end. It's all about points nowadays with defensemen, but everybody forgets about the other part. They're actually supposed to play defense. And I like Carrier, and I like these guys. Nothing personal, but I thought Avalanche was a little bit more physical, and they're manhandling Carrier and our smallest defenseman.
Hey, thanks for the call, William. We appreciate it. I mean, I will say, I don't know if I totally buy into what he's saying there, but Ekholm, I thought was pretty bad last night. And Ekholm, as much as we talk about Josi, and Josi is the Norris Trophy, you know, contender that they have. And by the way, we've had some people ask about last night hurting his chances for the Norris. The Norris Trophy voting is over. So that ends in the regular season. So just something to keep in mind there. But as good as Josi is, when you look at the tough matchups and the shutdown assignments, generally speaking, it's Ekholm and Carrier. That's who gets those assignments. And I just thought last night, those two seemed out of sync. And they played together basically the whole year. You know, obviously the Ekholm-Tomasino thing, that's a glaring mistake. And it's on Ekholm, but I think it's on Tomasino too. I mean, you got to get out of the way of the guy that's carrying the puck. But I just thought even beyond that, Ekholm looked a step slow last night. And you don't see that happen very often. I didn't think it was a very good night. It wasn't a very good night for anybody other than maybe Matt Duchene. But I thought it was a particularly bad off night for Ekholm.
Well, I mean, to argue with the caller, I think he's kind of talking about like you've transitioned at forward, but you haven't enough at defenseman in terms of bigger, stronger. I mean, there've been some big, strong guys in here in the last couple of years at defenseman. Doesn't necessarily translate. And Roman Josi is going to be on the first pairing of every team in the league, you know? So, I mean, I don't know how much transition there is ahead, but you need Ekholm. After that extension, you need him to be great in a series like this. Absolutely. I mean, he's a shutdown guy. Think about, again, let's go back to the Stanley Cup final run, because I keep bringing it up because it's very relevant. But at Coleman Subban, what did they do in that series? They were big, physical, shutdown pairing, and saw the best of the best on the other side, and they did a great job the entire run. So, I mean, I agree, like, you have to have that, but the Preds, I don't think that this is some, like, you're looking at Hines, like you said, goulash, like all of a sudden Hines has got to change out his kind of defenseman, and then you've got what you need. You need more good players. You need more forwards who, you know, can score, and you need to not have a top six forward who never scores or does anything offensively. That guy's name is Luke Cunningham. It's mind-boggling.
It's frankly, it's absurd that he's still getting those minutes, because it's been a disaster all season long for what he's brought to the table offensively. And you know, the size thing, I mean, look, no team in the NHL has all speed guys or all big guys. Like, it's hard to find that. Like, we talk about how big and strong Calgary is. Well, Calgary's best player is 5'9", 160 pounds.
Right.
Like, that's not the way things work in the NHL. It's hard to build your team totally one way or the other. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Preds on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We got the Choice Is Yours coming up next. We'll get Joe Rexroad's thoughts on that on the other side. Robbie and Rexroad, ESPN 1025, The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rexroad, sponsored by Smokeville Smoke Shop. Joe Rexroad in the questions chair today. We'll take your thoughts, as always, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, I turn things over to you.
All right. Sports or non-sports?
We'll go non-sports.
Non-sports. What's the movie that, when people tell you they haven't seen it, you get the most outraged?
Clever.
Oh, man.
Very clever there, Rex Rose.
Thank you. I try to be relevant.
There's a couple. Okay, so I'll answer this in two different ways. In honor of today being May the 4th, the original Star Wars trilogy, if you haven't seen that, which we know a few who haven't, that always drives me nuts. But that's kind of like the big picture trilogy aspect of it. One movie, Forrest Gump. Like, if you've not seen Forrest Gump, I'm trying to wonder what you've been doing for the last 30 years.
I have.
Those are my two answers.
I'm very proud of you. I actually wasn't sure.
Yes, no, I have. Life's like a box of chocolate, guys.
There you go.
See, this is why I'm not a movie person, because I can't quote them like you can, Joe, just in a sentence. Okay, mine is Blades of Glory. I don't know. Have you guys seen that? I think that probably is my top, like, I will laugh. It doesn't matter how many times I've seen it. If you've never seen it, go watch it. And I know I can't be the one to say this because I don't watch movies, Joe and Robbie tell me to, but funniest movie, like, I'll cry laughing every single time I see it. Hilarious.
By the way, it's Life is Like a Box of Chocolates, not chocolate, but I don't want to, I'm trying to mentor you here.
You never know what you're going to get.
That's right. Yeah, for me, it'd probably be, there are two that, the reason I get outraged, because it happens a lot. Like, these are two movies that they're on my list of, you know, quotable movies from a couple weeks ago. But I think that they are among the least watched of that list, which just blows my mind. One is A Dazed and Confused. I think a lot of people have seen it, but, like, way too many people I've come across who haven't. I'm like, no, please go immediately watch that. And then this is Spinal Tap too. Like, it's way too big a list. Like, it's basically like I've based my life around that movie. So please go watch that too. All right, sports. Which is more likely, AJ Brown ending up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, or John Robinson bringing the Lombardi Trophy to Nashville?
Ooh.
I would say John Robinson bringing the Lombardi Trophy to Nashville. I mean, look, the Hall of Fame is a heck of a bar. So I think A.J. Brown can have a great career and still not get in the Hall of Fame. Now, can A.J. Brown stay healthy? That's also a question that I have moving forward here. I realize that winning a Super Bowl is also a heck of a bar, given the fact that the Titans and Oilers as a franchise have not yet done it. So I don't feel great about either answer, but I will say I'll give the slight edge to J-Rob and the Titans winning a Lombardi Trophy.
See, this one's really hard for me because I feel like you know, he could get injured and then never play again or something like that. Whereas as a whole franchise, they're constantly changing the team and a chance to win the Super Bowl. But I think I'm going to risk it, actually, because I think A.J. Brown's ceiling is through the roof. And if he meets the expectations that people think he could, look at Robbie laughing, then
ceiling
I think
is
he,
the roof.
Yeah, then I think he could be a Hall of Famer. But then again, yeah, I'll go with the A.J. one. That's a hard one, though, Joe.
Yeah, I go that way, too, slightly, and I agree. I mean, look, I think neither of them are extremely likely. And I think the case for John Robinson is, I think, you know, he's got strong ownership support, and he's going to be able to see it through the whatever level of rebuild that's coming and come out on the other side as the GM. If not, then I think it'd be very easy to pick AJ, but it's hard to project the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, I think right now it's starting to go the other way next year. That'd be my guess. And then again, you have the painful process, and who knows where it goes with AJ. I think if he's healthy, I think he can have that kind of career. Now, that is definitely a big if. Again, neither are likely, but I'm slightly on the AJ side. Okay. I've heard a lot of reaction about the ending of Ozark. Don't spoil it if you've seen it. We haven't seen it yet. Katie's waiting for me. I think she is. She better not be Ozark cheating on me.
Ozark cheated on you, Joe.
Are you serious? Did she tell you?
I don't know.
God dang it. Don't get me all excited here. I've heard wide range reactions. I can't wait to see it. But what is the best ending of a series in television history?
Oh boy. There's a few different ways I could go here. Breaking Bad's got a good one. Don't want to spoil it, but it's got a good one. I'll go a little bit off the board. And I will say Justified on FX. It's got Timothy Olyphant in it, Walton Goggins, Raylan Givens, Boyd Crowder. It's a really good show, but the way it ends, it's hard to describe unless you've actually seen it. But the way it ends with those two together and the dialogue throughout the whole show, kind of culminating with this one moment, it's the perfect ending. I've always said it may not be like the most popular one, but I've thought it's the perfect ending to the series. So I will go Justified on FX.
Joe, you have to go next because I need another minute to think.
Okay. So my answer is Mad Men. And again, I'm not going to give it away. You know, I'm not going to spoil it. Mad Men is a great show, but like a lot of shows, I mean, I think like most shows, the last couple seasons, it faded a bit. It dragged a bit. It wasn't as good. It was, like so many shows have a fantastic idea for a season. And then maybe for building on that. But if you're really successful and you're going to go many seasons, it's hard not to, it's hard not to erode a bit, which Mad Men did. But they brought it together with the last scene so brilliantly. I was kind of like, all right, I'll watch the rest of the show. And then the ending was just like, oh, my God, that's so freaking perfect. So that's my number one. My honorable mention is Newhart. 80s version, waking up and realizing the entire 80s series was a dream and that actually he was still the Newhart from the 70s show. Sorry I spoiled that one, folks, but that was freaking great.
Okay, I feel like I just either have I don't watch a lot of movies or I don't watch a lot of TV, because I feel like off the top of your head you guys just have about seven. So I just Googled a bunch of TV shows and I'm like, oh, Friday Night Lights. I love that show, and I think the ending is really great. It just kind of all comes together and everything. But I feel like there's another one
show.
I just can't think of what one, because I really don't watch a lot of TV. Hence,
I'm still waiting on The Walking Dead, Dan. I feel like I'm the only human being on the earth that's still watching The Walking Dead.
That's still going?
Yeah, bro.
Oh my God.
It's in the last season.
I got into like midway through like the third season with Katie. I'm like, yeah, like I'm out. Like I can't. How much brain eating are we going to do here? Like, you know? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Some of them just have to end.
Still going strong.
In light of pressers of high interest this week, name the press conference you would schedule from a sports figure with truth serum involved to give you an answer on something you've always wanted to know.
Oh, boy. That's a good one. You may have to start us off on this one, Rex.
Yeah, okay.
You sift through.
Yep. Mine is very easy. Sit your butt in that chair, Michael Jordan. Take that truth serum and admit that you said you would not play on the dream team if Isaiah wasn't a part of it. Admit it, because you know it's true.
Oh, I got one after you.
My honorable mention would be Barry Sanders telling us all that went into him leaving the NFL in the midst of the greatest running back career ever. And also Gino Auriemma.
No, Joe!
Take it.
Go ahead, Gino Auriemma to admit that he cut Candace Parker from the Olympic team because she was a Lady Vol. Dun, 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 dun.
Well, it's not because she was a Lady Vol. Well, I mean, but catching, he doesn't like her. It was personal. It was him. He tried to say the committee did it, which is just such a load of crap. Anyway, yes, good answer.
I'll go Brady, and I'll go in two instances. The ending of his time with the Patriots, I would like for him to just like lay it all out there with him and Belichick. Yeah. And also, what in the world just happened this offseason with him going from retirement to almost owning apparently the part of the Miami Dolphins to now back playing for the Bucks. Like, he's not going to talk about it right now, but those would be my two with Brady.
Well, can we throw in there also, let us know what kind of next level PEDs you've been ingesting all these years that no one has detected yet. And are you actually a vampire or are you a human?
By the way, have you seen like the,
let's get it all in for Brady.
That's all the rage now on Twitter in terms of like opposing fan bases in SEC baseball. Now the big theory is like all the Tennessee players are on PEDs. That's been floating around there too.
Oh yeah, man. Oh, I love that one. Yeah. Back when I covered Michigan State, they were just routinely beating Michigan every year. And all of a sudden it was like, these guys have got to be roiding, man. It just, it doesn't add up. How could Taylor Lewan get his butt kicked like that? It's gotta be roids. Gotta be roids.
This has been The Choice Is Yours, sponsored by Smokeville Smoke Shop. Joe Rexroth, well done. I enjoyed that.
Thank you. Well done on your part, too.
Me too, Rex.
We'll see if I enjoy this next bit here. Coming up next, it's time for Jared versus Joe here on Robbie and Rexroth, the inaugural Jared versus Joe on our show edition coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroth here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.